Moby Dick Energy. Big Moby Dick Energy.
I want that Moby Dick. I want that energy. I want that Moby Dick Energy. Big Moby Dick Energy. I want that MDE. That Moby Dick Energy. I want that Moby Dick Energy. Big Moby Dick Energy. Hello, and welcome to Moby Dick Energy, the podcast where I, your host, Talia Levin, goes through Herman Melville's 1851 Queer Whaling Masterpiece, chapter by chapter, with an array of awesome guests. And this week, we are doing something a little bit different. We have chapter 40, Midnight Forecastle. Which takes our recent foray into the theater to full scale. And thanks to all of you who've sent in recordings of lines, we've turned it into a little radio play, which is super exciting. But first, I have a great guest, Akayla Lacey, who's a reporter at The Intercept, to come talk to me about this bizarre and wonderful chapter. And we're just gonna chat about it for a while, and then the play will begin. So, hello, Akayla.
Hi, Talia. How are you?
You got your title right. You're a reporter.
I am a reporter. And now in my free time, I also read snippets of classic novels.
I know. I feel like I'm like this ghoul that just like slides into people's DMs, and I'm just like, have you heard the good news?
No, it's a good, like, it's, as we talked about, it's a good excuse for me to dip my toe into something that I probably need to read at some point.
I just feel, so it's like between you and Natalie, like with these theater chapters, I've just like taken people who haven't read Moby Dick and like been like, you must read this now. Which seems, it's, I mean, the rest of the book is in prose, but, you know, he's just like, and now a play. And I'm like, well, these are the best to ambush people with, I suppose.
It was fun.
What did you think of Midnight Forecastle?
So, you know, I tried to orient myself in the middle of a book that I didn't know quite what was going on, but you did prime me that this is, you know, a deviation from the last 30-something chapters. I thought it was pretty, like, I read it a few times, and at first I didn't really know whether what I thought were, you know, hints at these racialized kind of, like, themes in each of the sailors' lines came up. Like, I noticed it, and then I was like, oh, maybe that's not actually what I'm reading. And then I noticed it a little bit more. And then obviously, like, it comes through in Pip's monologue. So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't expect that to be part of Moby Dick. I thought I was going into a whaling adventure, which I guess it is. But, yeah, it was not what I expected, is my takeaway.
Yeah, it's... It is a whaling adventure. Melville, like, you know, kind of a lot of the first chapters of the book, sort of setting up the fact that whaling is sort of this multicultural world. Like, these towns are full of people from all over the world, basically, who have come from all over and been recruited from all over to join this sort of capitalistic enterprise. Mm. And what's really happening here is basically we've had Ahab conscript the sailors into this sort of unholy, it's like heavily implied that it's sort of an unholy bargain, you know, where he's like, oh, I know you set off on a commercial whaling journey, you know, in order to just like get as much whale oil and money as you could. But like, surprise, this is actually my secret vengeance against a whale. And then he gets everybody super fucking drunk. So, like, this is Midnight Ford Castle is like all the sailors just drunk off their asses. That, like, that's what's
having having a row.
Yeah. They're like drinking and fighting. And it's almost like he's, I mean, there's just people from all over in this crew.
I had to look up Lascar sailor. You know, obviously he was talking about the Ganges, so I was like, oh, maybe somewhere in Southern Asia, and then I guess that's what the definition was. But yeah, it's quite a crew, and it's interesting because like all of them are like Lascar sailor, Maltese sailor, Sicilian sailor, and then Dagu and Pip and like Old Man X, and like I'm like, where are those people from? I don't know. What is, do you know what Old Man X, Manx, is it Manx? Is
that, yeah, so Manx you have Manx cats. It's kind of a Celtic it means he's from the Isle of Man, which is, I guess, like a British imperial possession of some sort. I'm not a geographer, so don't take my word for it, but he's from the Isle of Man.
I always thought it was Minx cat. That's crazy. I've been saying that wrong my whole life.
Yeah, it's like it's like an island that's part of became part of Scotland in 1266. Anyway, the Old Manx sailor, this is like his first appearance, but he talks a lot about pine trees here, and also just generally seems like a font of wisdom, of ambiguous wisdoms.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have like the Tahitian sailor, we have Dagu, we have Teshtigo, who's a Native American. Like, there's just a lot, there are a lot of racialized members of the crew, and then also a lot of European members of the crew. Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting, I think, tension between them, or just like, I think Melville is doing his best to portray them all equally, but it's sort of, there's a lot of commentary on whiteness and blackness in this chapter.
Yeah. And I had to reread the joke about like, it's hilarious to me that Melville is like, you know, this joke about, oh, Dagu showing his teeth is like seeing lightning in the night. And like, that's like a joke that I've heard, you know, like in modern times. And so I had to do a double take there, just because that's not what I was expecting to see here. But, and then, I mean, there's obviously like other bits about, you know, the line, I guess, that starts the row, saying that, thy race is the undeniable dark side of mankind, was, you know, striking. And it's interesting, I guess, I don't know, at this time, like, you don't really talk about the Spanish role in the slave trade as much, but at this time, I guess maybe it was more relevant or prominent. And so it's interesting that that's where, like, those are the two characters that the clash comes between. And I looked up Dagu, but I don't know if there's, like, a country associated with him. I just saw, like, he's supposed to be portraying this, like, giant African man. That's what I found.
I mean, that's basically... I think Melville treats race with a little more like tenderness and thought than most white authors in the 1850s, but that's like not a high bar to clear.
Right. Right. The bar does not exist.
Like, yeah, he's like maybe better than, I don't know, like some of the like eugenicists writing at this time. And I do think he tried, like, you know, some of his most compelling characters are non-white. It's just like at the same time, this sort of very on the nose commentary about whiteness and blackness is very, like, sometimes you're like, are you doing a symbolism here? Are you doing, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it would help if I read the book, but I'm wondering, like, we were talking, like, this is kind of the second appearance that Pitt makes, and he's kind of, like, a character that you wouldn't necessarily remember. Like, does this theme play, like, a primary role in preceding chapters, or, like, does it come up again later, or is this kind of just, like, a complete interlude? Like, I was, like, very curious as to what the reasoning behind having this be. I don't know. Is this the middle of the book?
Yeah. Well, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah.
We're sort of a third of the way through.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, like a divider of some sort, you know, for what it's worth.
There are 135 chapters in this book, and we're at chapter 40. So, it comes up a lot in the beginning. Sort of one of the first things that happens is that Ishmael, or call me Ishmael, you know, the white sailor, befriends befriends Queequeg, who is, you know, a cannibal from, like, some South Seas island, and they start, like, cuddling in bed almost immediately, and Ishmael has this line, like, better a sober cannibal than a drunken Christian, which is, you know, kind of Melville's take on, I think, just that. And then there's, like, a real love, you know, very possibly a gay love between them from the start. And then we do have this, you know, Ahab talks about my savage crew, which, you know, may be a reference to their temperament, but also is likely a reference to the fact that many of them are not white.
Mm.
So it, you know, we sort of have both going on. Like, I would say race is a big theme in the book. And then as we're on this sort of, like, all the sailors drunk and on parade, it is sort of a fascinating to me, just way for Melville to, like, showcase the cosmopolitan nature of the whale ship in a way. And also the way that the divides, like, even in this environment, the way these divides endure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can't imagine. I was like, wow, it must suck to be Pip on this boat, right? Like, and I don't know. It just, you wonder, like, what the environment would have been like in a group of people from, what is this, like, 8 different countries, like, stuck on a boat chasing a whale.
They've just realized they're not even just, like, chasing whales in general. They're, like, on a vengeance mission to kill, like, one particular whale.
Mm-hmm.
It's very bizarre and out of the ordinary thing to be conscripted into. Yeah, and Pip, as, like, the sort of lowliest guy, also gets the least money out of all of it, even if they become, like, even if they are successful, the way whalers are paid is via lay, like, their share of the profits.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, even if they have a phenomenally successful journey, which they probably won't, given that, like, they're thrall to the insane whim of, like, vengeance maddened dude, like, it will not come off amazingly well off. There's sort of an interesting moment where there's, like, a white man can't dance moment earlier in the chapter, where it's Tashtigo, who's Native American, is, like, quietly smoking. Like, that white man calls fun about, like, the way that they're dancing to Pip's tambourine.
Yeah.
And then the China sailor has to say, like,
rattle thy teeth, make a pagoda of thyself. I don't know what that even means. I think that's Melville just being like, I know what a pagoda is.
Right. Like, we're now in China. That's like what went through my head. I was like, subtle. Very subtle. Just throw a pagoda in there.
Whereas, like, say, the Sicilian sailor, it's not like he's like, this reminds me of a pizza.
Right. I know. I'm wondering, like, I'm looking again at that. I mean, he's talking about dancing, which I guess you could say, you know, it's Italian. But, it's not. It's definitely, like, it's like, oh, this is the time that I can demonstrate that, like, as you said, like, this is this cosmopolitan ship people, but also, like, look at everything that I know about all these these different kinds of people, which might explain why it's more like feels more contrived, as i.e. Pagoda.
Like Avengers Assemble, and you know, or like Earth, Wind, Fire, Heart, or whatever.
The Lasker sailor, like by Brahma, like
yeah, like let me talk about the Ganges every time I talk. Yeah. And but I guess this also applies to some of the white sailors, like the Iceland sailors, like, cold place. And, you know, but yeah, the Tahitian sailors, like, do you know I'm from a place where there are naked dancing girls? And let me talk about my map. Like, I have to say, Melville is not really that gifted at naturalistic dialogue. Neither in play form nor throughout the book, but like it becomes more striking when like a lot of these things are things that you can't really imagine a human saying.
Well, they're all kind of like yelling into the void too. Like they're not, I guess I'm scanning it again. I guess there are a few where they address each other directly, but most of it is just like very, like they're just screaming out. And like, I feel like I envision them all standing around in a circle, just like yell it, like talking across at one another, one at a time, which feels very unnatural, an unnatural way to speak.
Yeah, they're all just like talking about the sea, basically, or demanding that Pip play his tambourine for them. The Dutch sailor is like, you aren't spoiled by Amsterdam butter. is Amsterdam famous for its butter? I mean, weed butter?
Another subtle hint. I don't know. But that that one's funny. The other one that I laughed at, it was like, oh, well, I guess the Manx guy, he's just talking about, like, you said this already, but just talking about trees on his island. That's all that we have in the Isle of Man. Trees. Maybe it is. I've never been there. I don't know much about it. But it's...
Well,
it's like they're all just like a little puzzle piece, and it's like very a snippet of who they are or what they're bringing to the row that they're having, which is I don't know. It's hard to not think that those things aren't intentional when the central conflict that arises is like this race, you know, race remark.
Yeah. Well, according to Wikipedia, there's a lot of fishing on the Isle of Man, and motorcycle racing is a popular hobby. There's also a traditional sport called camig, which it's closely related to the Scottish game of shinty, and is similar to the Irish game of hurling. I don't know what those are, but you hit a ball. I think you hit a ball with a stick.
Okay.
It started on Hunt the Wren Day, which is the day after Christmas.
Hmm.
So that's an aside that I made. I do enjoy when let's trace the how this row like kind of comes off. It's like sort of midway through the chapter, they're all having fun. Like the Maltese sailor is like, you know, talking about how the waves are like boobs, and how he likes boobs, which Melville writes about very naturally because there's no way he's gay at all. And then, so the old Minx sailor, we have this line where he says, our captain has his birthmark. Look yonder, boys, there's another in the sky, like another cloud in the sky. Lurid like, you see, all else pitch black. And then Dagu says, whoever's afraid of black is afraid of me. I'm quarried out of it, which I guess is Melvillian for I am pissed off.
Yeah.
And then the Spanish sailor is like, yeah, I actually do dislike black people.
And he says aside, which I didn't realize before. That's an aside.
He's like, ah, he wants to bully. Which I don't think saying, like, hey, stop saying, like, black is evil is necessarily a bullying comment. It's sort of silly of Dagu to be like, don't be afraid of a storm cloud.
Yeah, that's my thought. It's like, it's interesting because it doesn't seem like he's very, the Manx sailor is very clearly describing the sky. So it's like kind of an interesting thing for Dagu to say, or like out of the blue. I don't know. I'm going back up to see if he says, cause that's like his first, yeah, that's his first line in the thing. Right.
Yeah. Like he just hears the word black and is kind of like, what did you say?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's really drunk also. I mean, that's sort of the other prelude to this chapter. But we have Dagu kind of going off half-cocked, but then the Spanish sailor comes out of nowhere and is like, yes, I am racist. and then everyone's kind of shooting the shit, like, sitting around, and then the line you mentioned, it's like, what's that? I saw lightning. No, it's Dagu's teeth. Like, because I guess it's like a flash of white in a black face.
Yeah.
I do like Dagu's next line, though. Where he's like, white skin, white liver. Like, fuck you.
He tells him to swallow his teeth.
Yeah. And he calls him mannequin, which, I mean, yeah, like, that's a pretty boss line. And the Spanish sailor's rejoinder, knife thee heartily, is just weird. Like, I'm gonna stab you. And then, yeah.
And they all get excited, because there's a... Well, maybe not excited. Maybe they're just alerting each other.
Oh, no, they're pretty excited. Like, the Belfast sailor is like, hell yeah. Virgin be blessed. A row. And then the old Manx sailor, who we've already established as this voice of sort of wisdom, says that there's a ring on the horizon of clouds, presumably. It's like, in that ring, Cain struck Abel. And to me, like, that makes me wonder if Melville is trying to cast this racial conflict as, like, a sort of an elemental human sin, maybe. Or, you know, I don't think it's incidental to bring up Cain and Abel
immediately
after a fight has sprung up.
I mean, it's like... Oh, this, it's like, I can imagine it, like, panning over to the Manx sailor being like, well, you might be wondering how I got here. Like, this is like what will happen. I don't know. And I wonder, like, it at this point in the book, like, they realize that, like, they're on this vengeance quest. They're all drunk. They're out in the middle of the sea. Like, you know, it's kind of like make or break at that point. They could be on their way to death or nothing. And so you're stripped down to like your least reasonable self. And then they get into this fight over racism basically on the ship. I mean, that's a really interesting read. I didn't think of it that way. I like kind of glossed over that reference, but it definitely like, that makes sense to me. And would make sense in, like, the kind of the delivery of this as like so in your face, like look at this, like look at what I'm trying to tell you.
The thing about Melville that's very important to stress is that he is in no way subtle at all. Like, it's true that like the symbolism of Moby Dick, like the whale himself, is never like entirely 100% clear, although we'll learn more about it in the next chapter entitled Moby Dick. but he's never subtle about anything. Like, he really just telegraphs everything that he says very intensely. But what's interesting here is that the person who gets the final word is this previously sort of almost fairly introduced, insignificant, sort of lowly, humble character, Pip, who... Well, so the fight breaks up because the storm is coming up, the squall. And so they all sort of scatter to do their sailorly duties, which one hopes, like, they can do okay while being pissed out of their minds.
Mm.
And then Pip has this sort of monologue here, which I'm curious what you think about it.
So, I mean, this is the moment where I was like, gosh, this, he seems to feel like so alone, and like, you know, it's, he's very clearly like, wow, like, I can't believe you think this is, you know, that he's saying like jollies, Lord help such jollies. And then like, look at all the shit that I have to do on the boat. Like, I can't believe that, like, this is what you're doing. And then even on top of that, this racial aspect to what they're fighting about, and the fact that he is like in this uber vulnerable position as a crew member, but also like, you know, ostensibly Dagu is the only other black person, unless I'm missing someone in this thing. I don't want to say it resonates with me because I've never been in the 1850s on a whaling ship as a cabin member, but it was, it was kind of like, you know, it was interesting. It's as something that transcends time and space, right? Like, kind of feeling an out of body experience, like watching something like this occur with people that you're with.
And this real,
sort of never seen anyone lunge at someone to knife them for something. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's this real cultural disconnect here where Pip's like, oh my God, like, why? This is what you do for fun?
Mm-hmm.
And like, we're seeking out the white whale. And this evening makes me jingle all over like a tambourine. Like, they've all sworn to hunt down this white whale, and I'm scared. You know, everyone else has no bowels to feel fear, and he asks, "Thou big white god aloft there somewhere in yon darkness, have mercy on this small black boy down here."
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is sort of a surprisingly poignant line. It's to me, an interesting way to end this very raucous chapter on this very poignant note of, like, you know, the chapter begins with singing Spanish ladies and, you know, this sort of merry, raucous situation, and then ends with this very poignant plea to, like, you know, basically save me from all this madness.
It was striking to me also that it calls it a white god, because, you know, I don't usually, that's not something that I've, like, that I can remember. Like, I mean, I like, the phrase is not, like, surprising to me necessarily, but it's like, oh, like, the contrast between, like, big white and small, big white god and small black boy is, like, obviously, again, not subtle, but that you would... Like, I'm wondering, like, is he talking about God actually being physically white, or is he talking about a power or like a sense of like urgency that like is specific to white people, as far as like on this boat, like they're all going out, they're like, he's putting his life on the line to like go on this person's personal vendetta against a whale, and meanwhile like they're getting into a fight over the color of someone's skin on the boat. And it's like, again, this like cognitive dissonance where you are under the, you're under like the general framing of like whiteness, right? Like in the world, like that's like how you op, like the framework that you operate within. So that's kind of like how I read that line.
Yeah, like, well, he talks about the white squall and the white whale, and maybe he's saying like, well, I hope their God takes mercy on me. I mean, because it would be an odd thing if Pip racialized God as white. I mean, I guess that's not inconceivable, especially in this like pre-Civil War era. But I think he's basically saying like, may their God protect me because they're crazy.
Right. Or like, it's not his God. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so we end with Pip shrinking under the windlass. So it's like almost like all this bravado and all of the sort of masculinity and posturing gets sort of stripped away at the very end by this small, poignant plea of someone who is like, by virtue of his racialization, sort of excluded from the broader body of the crew.
And like, you know, it's, he's obviously like, not only that, but his position as this cabin boy, where like, you know, Dagu seems to be an equal member of the other sailors, at least. Well, maybe not, because his name isn't, his title isn't sailor, but like, you know, that's, well,
above the sailors, actually. As a harpooner, he would have gotten a higher pay.
Okay, yeah.
He's below, it's like you have the captain, the mates, and then the harpooners, as far as like the hierarchical structure goes.
Right, and so not only is Pip like on the, you know, he's on the, he's being kind of like, as you said, like excluded from this crew, like on the basis of his position in the crew, but like because of race also. And so, you know, to see someone above all the other sailors like getting knifed for that too, is definitely like, you know, you can imagine it fit. It's I think it's like conveying his smallness and his like solitary state pretty poignantly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there is something to be said about, like, I think Melville, for all his, like, rampant exoticization of his non-white characters, like, does show a certain ability to recognize what it must be like to be kind of one of the only, you know, black people on a white sailing ship.
Or, yeah, or one of the only, like, something, right? Like, you know, within the theme of this being a queer whaling adventure, like, it, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, although I would wager, based on some stuff I've read about sailing, that queer experiences were not sort of completely alien to folks. But I think certainly that thread of like the outsider, the isolated one, it goes through Ishmael's experience, and it threads through, you know, even this sort of party scene, from which like our previous main characters, Ishmael and Queequeg, are sort of absent too. But I think Pip's monologue at the end there really sort of cuts down the the prior, like the entire rest of the chapter. Like he just really makes everything that's happened before look kind of dumb.
Yeah. You're like, why did I read all of this like weird description about, like, it's just, yeah, that's definitely, you're like, it's not like an easy, I mean, it's a short read, but it's not like a clear, it's like purposely not clear language. So, and I don't know, maybe that's part of the delivery as far as like, this is not relevant or important, like, but that, like, so that his final words like stand out that much more in a more articulate way than I'm saying, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's truly bizarre dialogue, and I think it does fit with the rest of the book, in the sense that none of Melville's characters particularly speak like human beings necessarily speak.
The reason that I never read the book.
Well, I think there's.
No, I'm just kidding. I know there's value to that kind of reading. I'm just
like, sure. I mean, Melville is very florid, but to me, like the sort of audacity and fun of his language, like the way he plays with language, is really sort of a joy to read. So I don't mind it as much. Like I find it kind of beautiful in its own way, but I also totally understand how sort of alienating it might feel at first, like especially, you know, because a lot of people are exposed to this book at like far too young an age, in my opinion. I mean, I was a weird isolated nerd when I was a teen, so I took to it, but I think this is a book that is best to come to when you're a little older and like can sort of dive in to something with language this ambitious, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so any final thoughts on the chapter or favorite lines?
Ooh, favorite lines. Let me look. Hang on. Let me glaze over it quickly. I'm trying to find the line where Pip. Oh. Oh, okay. Well, that's not really my favorite line. I was just looking at the one where he says that he doesn't know where it is. But really, what I like about that line is that the caveat that he's both sulky and sleepy as his introduction. Don't know where it is. That's not my favorite line, though. That's boring. I'm going to keep looking for another one.
I mean, sulky and sleepy is a completely valid way to be, in my opinion.
I guess, actually, I'm going to have to go with Tash Digo quietly smoking. That's a white man. He calls that fun. Humph, I save my sweat. Like, just a very relatable, I save my sweat. Like, can't be fucked. I can't be bothered with this. I just appreciate, the energy of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not for any like insightful reason. I just think it's funny.
Thinking things are funny is a very valid emotion. Like I think one of the overarching themes of this podcast is like this book is funnier and weirder than you think it will be.
Yeah.
Like I think there, you know, there's this, if you don't know the book, it's easy to think of it as like almost some sort of Hemingway-ish, you know, all white, sort of just sailing adventure, Treasure Island style, but a whale. But no, it's much more bizarre than that.
Yeah.
Often funny in like a, you know, dense 19th century-ish kind of way.
Yeah.
My question is, what would you bring on a whaling journey? I ask this to every guest, so I'm not just trapping.
Yeah, this is a tough one. So I'm trying to, I mean, in theory, like,
oh, you can. So the rules are you're going what are the rules? 3 years around the Cape of Horn on a 19th century whaling ship, but you can bring something from any era.
Wait, how many years?
3.
3 years. Okay. I can bring something from any era. I think I'm going to have to go. This is so boring, but I'm going to have to say a French press. But I guess, honestly, my first thought was something to purify water because I'm thinking like utility. But I don't have a water source, but I'm like dangerously addicted to coffee. So I think I would bring that and find some way to drink it. Yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah, a French press is a completely valid thing. Maybe a desalinator.
Is that a machine that exists?
I think there are ways to desalinate water.
My other question is, like, I mean, I don't have a power source, which is just, you know, that's a very millennial question to ask. Obviously, you don't have a power source in a whaling ship.
On the Pequod, yeah. I mean, not no. Well, you don't have the power. You have the sun, so you could bring like a solar battery.
Okay, so actually, I'm gonna alter my answer. I would bring a solar battery and a desalinator and a
fresh. Yes, press. Those are completely valid, magnificent answers because I think you know, there's always a chance things could go wrong. Disastrously so. Especially when your captain is a madman.
And everyone's drunk.
And everyone's drunk and trying to stab each other for, like, racial. It's, like, quite a crew. Yeah, well, so, Akayla, thank you so much for coming on. And with that, we're going to introduce the theatrical portion of this of this week's episode. So with no further ado, I present Chapter 40, Midnight Forecastle.
To you, Spanish ladies, farewell and adieu.
Oh, boys, don't be sentimental. It's bad for the digestion. Take a tonic and follow me.
Our captain stood upon the deck, a spyglass in his hand, a viewing of those gallant whales that blew at every stand. Oh, your tubs and to your boats, me boys, and by your braces stand. And we'll have one of those fine whales and boys overhand. So
be cheer up, me lads.
Let your hearts never fail while the bold harpooner is right.
A vast the chorus. Eight bells there. Do you hear, bellboy? Strike the bell eight, thou pip, thou black thing, and let me call the watch. I've the sort of mouth for that, the hogshead mouth. So, starbolines, ahoy! Eight bells there below. Tumble up!
Grand snoozing tonight, matey. Fat night for that. I mark this in our old mogul's wine. It's quite as deadening to some as filliping to others. We sing. They sleep. Aye, lie down there like ground-tier butts. At him again. There, take this copper pump and hail him through it. Tell him to a vast dreaming of their lasses. Tell him it's the resurrection. They must kiss their last and come to judgment. That's the way, that's it. Thy throat ain't spoiled with eating Amsterdam butter.
Yes, boys. It's a wee jig or two before we ride to anchor in Blanket's Bay. What say ye? There comes the other watch. Stand by all legs. Pip! Little Pip, hurrah with your tambourine.
Don't know where it is.
Beat thy bellies in, and wag thy ears. Jig it, men, I say. Merry's the word. Hurrah! Damn me, won't you dance? Form now, Indian file, and gallop into the double shuffle? Throw yourselves! Legs! Legs! Aha!
I don't like your form, matey. It's too springy to my taste. I'm used to ice floors. I'm sorry to throw cold water on the subject, but excuse me.
Me too. Where's your girls? Who but a fool would take his left hand by his right and say to himself, how do you do? Partners. I must have partners.
Aye. Girls in a green. Then I'll hop with you. Yay. Turn, grasshopper.
Well, ye sulkies, there's plenty more of us. Hoe corn when you may, say I. All legs go to harvest soon. Ah, here comes the music. Now for it.
Here you are, Pip. And there's the windlass bit. Up you mount. Now, boys. Go it, Pip. Bang it, bellboy. Rig it, dig it, stig it, quig it, bellboy. Make fireflies. Break the jinglers.
Jinglers, you say? There goes another. Dropped off. I pound it so.
Rattle thy teeth, then, and pound away. Make a pagoda of thyself.
Merry mad! Hold up thy hoop, Pip, till I jump through it. Split jibs! Tear yourselves!
That's a white man. He calls that fun. Huh. I save my sweat.
I wonder whether those jolly lads bethink them of what they are dancing over. I'll dance over your grave, I will. That's the bitterest threat of your night women that beat headwinds round corners. Oh, Christ, to think of the green navies and the green-skulled crews. Well, well, belike the whole world's a ball, as you scholars have it, and so 'tis right to make one ballroom of it. Dance on, lads. You're young. I was once.
This is worse than pulling after whales in a calm. Give us a whiff, Tash.
By Brahma. Boys, it'll be dough sail soon. The skyborn high tide Ganges turned to wind. Thou showest thy black brow, Siva.
It's the waves. The snow's caps turn to jigget now. They'll shake their tassels soon. Now, would all the waves were women, then I'd go drown and sashay with them evermore. There's not so sweet on earth. Heaven may not match it as those swift glances of warm, wild bosoms in the dance when the over-arboring arms hide such ripe, bursting grapes.
Tell me not of it. Hark ye, lad. Fleet interlacings of the limbs. Lithe swayings, coyings, flutterings, lip, heart, hip, all graze. Unceasing touch and go. Not taste, observe ye. Else come satiety. Hey, pagan?
Hail, holy nakedness of our dancing girls, the Heva Heva! Ah, low-veiled, high-palmed Tahiti, I still rest me on thy mat, but the soft soil has slid. I saw thee woven in the wood, my mat. Green the first day I brought ye thence, now worn and wilted quite. Ah, me! Not thou nor I can bear the change. How then, if so be transplanted to yon sky. Hear I the roaring streams from Pirohiti's peak of spears when they leap down the crags and drown the villages? The blast! The blast! Up spine and meet it!
How the sea rolls swashing against the side! Stand by for reefing parties! The winds are just thrusting swords! Pell-mell, they'll go landing presently!
Crack! Crack, old ship! So long as thou crackest, thou holdest. Well done! The mate there holds ye to it stiffly. He's no more afraid than the Isle Fort at Kattegat, put there to fight the Baltic with storm-lashed guns on which the sea salt cakes.
He has his orders, mind ye that. I heard all they have tell him he must always kill a squall, something as they burst a waterspout with a pistol. Fire your ship right into it.
Blood, but that old man's a grand old cove. We are the lads to hunt him up his whale.
How the three pines shake. Pines are the hardest sort of tree to live when shifted to any other soil, and here there's none but the crew's cursed clay. Steady, helmsman, steady. This is the sort of weather when brave hearts snap ashore and keeled hulls split at sea. Our captain has his birthmark. Look yonder, boys, there's another in the sky. Lurid, like you see. All else, pitch black.
What of that? Who's afraid of blacks, afraid of me? I'm quarried out of it.
He wants to bully, the old grudge makes him touch. I, Harpooner, thy race is the undeniable dark side of mankind. Devilish dark at that. No offense.
None.
That Spaniard's mad, or drunk. But that can't be. Or else in his one case, our old mogul's firewaters are somewhat long in working.
What's that I saw? Lightning? Yes.
No. Dagoo, showing his teeth.
Swallow thine, mannequin. White skin, white liver.
Knife thee heartily. Big frame, small spirit.
A row! A row! A row!
A row! A row alone, and a row aloft. Gods and men. Both brawlers.
A row! Arr! A row! The virgin be blessed! A row! Plunge in with ye!
Fair play! Snatch the Spaniard's knife! A ring! A ring!
Ready form there. A ring at horizon. And that ring Cain struck Abel. Sweet work, right work, no? Why then, God, makes thou ring?
Hands by the halyards, in top gallant sails, stand by to reef topsails.
The squall! The squall! Jump, my jollies!
Jollies? Lord help such jollies. Crish, crash, there goes the jib stay. Blang, whang, God, duck lower, Pip, here comes the royal yard. It's worse than being in the world woods, the last day of the year. Who'd go climbing after chestnuts now? But there they go, all cursing, and here I don't. Fine prospects to them, they're on the road to heaven. Hold on hard. Jiminy, what a squall. But those chaps there are worse yet. They are your white squalls, they. White squalls? White whale, sure, sure. Here have I heard all their chat just now, and the white whale, sure, sure, but spoken of once. And on this evening, it makes me jingle all over like my tambourine, that anaconda of an old man swarm in to hunt him. Oh, thou big white god aloft there somewhere in yon darkness, have mercy on this small black boy down here. Preserve him for all men that have no bowels to feel fear.
Eric Garner, Dontre Hamilton, John Crawford III, Michael Brown, Ezel Ford, Dante Parker, Michelle Kussos, Laquan McDonald, Tanisha Anderson, Akai Gurley, Tamir Rice, Romaine Brisbane, Jeremy Reed, George Mam, Matthew Ajabade, Frank Smart, Natasha McKenna, Tony Robinson, Anthony Hill, Maya Hall, Philip White, Eric Harris, Walter Scott, William Chapman II, Alexa Christian, Brendan Glenn, Felix Kumi, Keith Harrison McLeod, Junior Prosper, Lamontez Jones, Patterson Brown, Dominique Hutchinson, Anthony Ashford, Alonzo Smith, Tariq Crawford, India Kager, Levante Biggs, Michael Lee Marshall, Jamar Clark, Richard Perkins, Nathaniel Harris Pickett, Miguel Espinal, Michael Noel, Kevin Matthews, Betty Jones, Quintonio Laguerre, Antroni Scott, Wendell Celestine, David Joseph, Callan Rockmore, Deshaun Perkins, Christopher Davis, Marco Loud, Peter Gaines, Tori Robinson, Darius Robinson, Kevin Hicks, Mary Truxillo, DeMarcus Seamer, Willie Tillman, Victor Manuel LaRosa, Jonathan Sanders, Freddie Blue, Joseph Mann, Salvador Ellswood, Sandra Bland, Albert Joseph Davis, Darius Stewart, Billy Ray Davis, Samuel DeBouse, Michael Sabby, Brian Keith Day, Christian Taylor, Troy Robinson, Asham Farah Manley, Terrell Thomas, Seville Smith, Alton Sterling, Philando Castilli, Terrence Kretschner, Paul O'Neill, Altera Woods, Jordan Edwards, Aaron Bailey, Ronell Foster, Stephen Clark, Antoine Rose II, Botham Jean, Pamela Turner, Dominique Clayton, Adeshanna Jefferson, Christopher Whitfield, Christopher McVeree, Eric Reason, Michael Lorenzo Dean, Brianna Taylor, George Floyd. These are the names of victims that have lost their lives due to systematic racism and police brutality. This is a non-comprehensive list of deaths curated by NPR since Eric Garner's death in July of 2014. From 88.9, I'm Saddam Fathayed.
Moby Dick Energy. Big Moby Dick Energy.
I want that Moby Dick. I want that energy. I want that Moby Dick Energy. Big Moby Dick Energy. I want that MDE. That Moby Dick Energy. I want that Moby Dick Energy. Big Moby Dick Energy. Woo-hoo.